Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, welcome to the Football Writers Podcast. My name's Mike Calvin. I'm joined by Tony Evans of the Evening Standard and Jonathan Northcroft of the Sunday Times. We'll start with Liverpool, where Jurgen Klopp's first year as manager has been celebrated like the second coming. It's all been a bit one direction. Has he lived up to the hype, Tony?
Well, no one could live up to the hype. You know, it got as much coverage as 20 years of Wenger. You know, it's like... I was a little bit surprised, but, you know, it's let's face it, he's been elevated to Godhead without any real evidence. They're on a good run. They're moving in the right direction. But, I mean, really, come on. You know, let's have a bit of perspective here.
So that's the emotional, John. Let's dwell on the practical. You've looked very hard at the way that Klopp prepares. Fantastic emphasis on fitness, three-a-days. Give an insight into the way he's preparing his team.
Yeah, I mean, you know, fitness is a big part of what Jurgen Klopp does, obviously, to play his pressing game, to play his high-energy sort of football. Players have to be extremely lean and they have to work as a collective. But what's interesting to me is exactly... And this guy, he's got a sports science degree, so he presumably knows what he's doing.
A lot of modern managers, actually.
Yeah, I mean, it is now... There's a sort of change now. I think there's a lot more science coming into it. And if they don't have degrees themselves, they have someone in the staff that does. And it's a level that he's taking it to. And it's also the kind of mental side of it where I think he's getting players to sort of push through what they normally would have considered tiredness. So I was looking at what he did in pre-season. When they were away in Palo Alto in California, 30-degree heat, you know, he had them working triple sessions. I don't even know how you get through a triple session, really. And, you know, one of the witnesses I spoke to said, you know, you have players lying on the turf, sort of choking back, vomit, wheezing, and Klopp's going around sort of getting them to get up for the next set. And rather worryingly for Liverpool players, he's saying to them, you're not even half as fit as Borussia Dortmund were. Now, the proof for me, and you can see how incredibly fit they are and how big a part of their game that is, the proof for me will be whether it lasts the entire season.
That's it. Can they sustain it?
Well, you look at Tottenham last year, where they were doing two-a-days up until February, and they ran out of steam, and they were mentally and physically worn by the time the end of the season come. And you've got to be careful, you know, you've got to balance it right. Now, you'd think with Klopp's sports science background then, you know, he knows what he's doing, but the proof will be in the pudding. And one of the problems is, as well as they're doing now, and the front four, front five are doing superb, they're playing a high press, they're nicking the ball. The problem is if people get behind that, at the moment, the midfield and the defence aren't good enough.
This is what hasn't changed about Liverpool, is it? Through successive managers, Brendan Rodgers was exactly the same. There's nothing wrong with, at his peak, the way they were attacking, but it was 50 goals a season they were conceding. Mm. Now, that's the question, isn't it, with this Klopp Liverpool? We can see how they can overwhelm teams with the ball, but even in that Arsenal game where they were the better side, they conceded three goals.
Well, you know, in the first half as well, you know, Arsenal were on top.
Yeah.
And the thing is, there's not a great deal of balance about them. You look at City as well, there's no balance with them. And compare them to Tottenham, who have an incredibly balanced side.
Yeah, that's the thing. These three teams at the top are actually quite similar in their ideologies. When you look at it, is intensity, it's fitness, it's trying to play football at a very, very high speed. They've all just got slightly different emphasis. I'd say Tottenham are more defensive orientated, whereas Liverpool trying to overwhelm and you know, City are somewhere in the middle, a bit more structured.
What about the human factor here? Because, you know, great managers are judged by individual impact on players. So if you look at Klopp, Lallana's improved out of all recognition. Mm. And what about Henderson? You know, here we're talking about people saying, well, this could be another England captain now. And people were basically dismissing him 3 months ago.
Yeah, he's had a difficult time, Henderson. I mean, you know, Rodgers didn't particularly fancy him, didn't want him, and then he ended up a regular in the team. People argue that had he not got sent off against Man City in 2014, they might have won the league. The ownership at Liverpool don't fancy him at all. You know, they'd get rid of him if they had the chance. Yeah, he's always done a reasonable job. I think one of the problems he had is there was a perception I was brought in to replace Steven Gerrard, and he wasn't. You know, there was a recognition that you need a platoon of people to do that, and he was always a bit callow, a bit nervous. Now he's developed. You know, he's very vocal on the pitch. You know, perhaps too vocal. Sometimes it doesn't ring true. Mm. You know, he looks if he's trying too hard. But you know, he's always had a lovability. When he first moved to Liverpool, I talked to people at Sunderland. He said, "Don't worry, he'll grow up. He'll be all right." And you know, it's taken a long time for him to grow up, really. But I think he suits Klopp's style of play, and I think he's perfect for that.
I mean, he's technically very good. I remember watching him doing a training drill with England back in Euro 2012, and what struck me was the quality of his touch first time. I hadn't actually seen that in a Liverpool shirt because I think he'd been a little bit cowed initially by trying to wear that jersey. But watching him technically, that kind of changed my mind about him a little bit. And he has grown up this season. Mm. I think when Klopp arrived, he felt a kind of burden as the captain to try and... Mm. Because he was injured, remember, when Klopp arrived, and I think he felt a burden when he came back to try and justify his status, and he had a foot injury at the time. And having come through that and kind of won the battle with Emre Can to be that sort of centre midfield kind of linchpin for Klopp, I think that's done a lot for him. And now he looks a lot more comfortable in his own skin.
Yeah. Well, what about Daniel Sturridge? You know, regular goal scorer, but there's always a but with him, isn't there?
You know, probably the purest goal-scoring talent in the Premier League, but unless he's physically and mentally perfect, it's a struggle for him. And I think that's still going to blow up. He was the golden boy at the club. The ownership loved him. I mean, Rodgers couldn't force him to do anything. You know, he made the rules. And to be fair, the Liverpool's medical staff, let's be kind about this, got his injury wrong and told him his injury wasn't as bad as it was. So let's be fair to him. But so he played when he wanted to. Klopp is the new golden boy. God, they love him in Boston. And now he makes the rules. So it's difficult for Sturridge. If he says Sturridge play, Sturridge has to play. And that could blow up at some point very soon.
Yeah, but I like Klopp's man management to Sturridge, I have to say, because I think he was probably indulged a little bit too much.
Oh, and very much so, yeah.
You know, yeah, he was allowed, I think, to use his own physios and he used the guys in Boston when he wasn't using the ones in Liverpool. And Klopp's come in and he's just he's reduced his status to that of every other player, a bit like maybe Mourinho's done at United to Rooney. Now he's just another player that has to prove his fitness. And if he's playing well and he's fit, he'll play. But if he doesn't, he's on the bench. And what I notice is there's not even a debate about it anymore when he gets left out. And that's a wake-up call to any player. Mm.
Yeah. Next Monday, Tony, you know, one of the great tribal collisions of the season, Liverpool.
And the Festival of Hate.
The Festival of Hate. When you approach that game, does it help that Klopp is such an overtly emotional manager? Does he respond to the vibe of that match?
Well, I think it can be a negative. I mean, one of my big downers on Klopp was in Basel when they went 3-1 down. He turned and tried to rouse the crowd. Stop it. Concentrate on the pitch. Focus. The emotions are great to a certain extent, but when you're managing in games like that, you've got to get a clear head about you. Remember, Stephen come on as a substitute and got himself sent off in a minute. That's what emotions does you in this game. You know what? It's all right for the fans to have emotions. Just get on and win it.
Yeah, I agree about Basel. That was the one time I had a little bit of a doubt about this sort of style that he's got. But he did harness the emotion quite well in the Europa League tie against United. I mean, United were just so much overwhelmed at Anfield in that game, and that sort of killed the tie. So I guess if you can do it the right way, but while retaining that kind of clear thinking, that's what he's got to train for.
Because you talk about doubts. Yeah. It's probably the first time for quite a while that people are expressing doubts about Jose Mourinho.
Yeah.
He'll love this fixture, won't he?
I'm not sure, because I don't think he's got a team. I don't think he's got the right team at the moment. And that, we'll know that, and that must be in his mind. He's already been humbled in the Manchester derby. And when I look at him at United, I see someone that's trying to, you know, move something from a long way away from where he needs it to be, right all the way over there. Well,
what's really shocking is I thought he'd go in there and at least organise them better and at least get some snap into the play, move the ball forward quickly. But they still look like a Van Gaal team.
They do.
And he looks like a man who doesn't know where to go with it.
I think if you look at his signings, he signed four players, all incredible athletes. I know Zlatan's old, but you know, some athlete for his age. Yeah. He obviously wants athletes.
And he made a virtue of saying, you know, I know the four players I want, he's got them, no excuses.
Yeah, yeah. Well, he talked his team up a little bit too much at that point, because those four players alone aren't going to be enough to bring Man United from the depths they've been in the last couple of seasons under Van Gaal. They're just, you know, we've been talking about Liverpool, City and Spurs and the fast-paced, super fit football they're playing. Well, Man United just look like from a different era at the moment. A bit steady, studied, bit slow. And he's still got too many slower players in that team, which is Rooney's problem.
And one of the great traits of Mourinho's best teams is the speed which they got the ball forward.
Yeah.
You know, they always, people said they were defensive. They weren't. They were structured, but when they got the ball, boom, gone. You know, that diagonal ball into Drogba, then Lampard down the channel, everyone charging forward. And yet, you know, you look at United and it's so pedestrian, it's untrue.
Yeah, I mean,
in that context, we've got to look at Wayne Rooney. We talk about him every week. You know, you were at Wembley, Jonathan. Looking at that, he reminded me of an old Labrador whose back legs are going. And you know that you're going to have to go down to the vet soon. It's going to be dreadful. It just felt sad.
It did, and to extend your analogy, maybe he should just be, you know, sent to the farm in Wales rather than the vets. You know, maybe he needs to ultimately go to a different kinder. Well, maybe, yeah. You know, just a kinder.
Can't resist that, can you?
Yeah, it was on a plate for you, wasn't it? But yeah, he is in crisis. I'd have to say, I'm a big Wayne Rooney fan. I've sort of felt that the criticism of him for being over the hill started very, very early. Started 3 or 4 years ago by people who just basically didn't like him, and at that point they were wrong. But eventually, you're going to be proved right if you keep saying that. And I think now we're at the point where he really needs to sort out his game. What surprised me at Wembley was somebody of his ability couldn't find a pass to unlock Malta's defence. Jordan Henderson could. Mm. Wayne Rooney couldn't. Now, he's the most gifted footballer, probably, certainly in terms of vision, in that England team. He's slow, he's older, but he should be able to break down a defence with a pass. And he couldn't do it. And I don't know what kind of player he's developing into at the moment, and I'm not sure if he does either. I think he's got the ability to come through this, but Man United aren't going to wait for him to do it.
Well, I mean, as far as I'm concerned, there's only one position ever to play Wayne Rooney, and that's up front. Play the ball in front of him. The one thing that Roy Hodgson did well is get the ball in front of Rooney and get him running onto it.
Did you play him 10 then?
Second striker, basically, yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, anywhere else, he just slows the game down. And as he drops deeper and deeper, you know, and especially if he goes back to goal, it highlights the weakness of his touch. You know, the ball bounces off him. When it's played in front of him, it's a daily. And if he misses it, it's a virtue. You know, but it's, you know, well, they flew in, you know, some of those great goals against City, the one off his shin.
Yeah.
You know, it's, you know, I mean, that was an overhead kick. But the thing is, he had that knack a striker has. It's a daily. He just, as he drops deeper and deeper, he looks worse and worse. And people raved about him in the Euros going, he dominated the midfield. The standard of the teams he's playing was Sunday League.
What about, if you look at international and club football, there are parallels. Gareth Southgate, like Mourinho, has got a vested interest in investing in young players. Two of the best young players around, Marcus Rashford, Jesse Lingard. Lingard, great movement on his England debut. Doesn't look a natural finisher.
No.
By a long, long way.
Certainly didn't.
And Rashford, he just dominates any occasion he turns up at.
Yeah, he does. And he's just got this, you know, you see it, you know it when you see it, don't you? And he's got that ability to just look at home in whatever setting, any situation. And he would go in against Liverpool with all that fixture involves, and I'm sure he wouldn't play any different to the way he normally plays. I think Rooney's big problem is Pogba as much as anything else. Pogba needs to charge up into that area. Pogba's got a great link with Zlatan. You notice that when you watch United, that the two of them for whatever reason, just seem to be, you know, able to connect with each other on the pitch.
But the thing is about Pogba, you look at Pogba, and, you know, Deschamps has been honouring him for his form with France.
Yeah.
He's played something like 74 games in 14 months. Mm-hmm. You know, we started the show talking about fitness. Is he on a bit of a burnout kick at the moment?
Well, I don't think it's a burnout. I mean, I think he's physically, he's magnificent. He's almost a prototype Premier League player. You know, gets up and down and strong and all that. But in terms of football intelligence, I've rarely seen such a highly rated player who's so, I'll be honest about it, dumb on the pitch. He makes bad decisions. He doesn't use space well. And, you know, this is where I thought Mourinho would, you know, would teach him. He's played under good managers before. Yeah. And, you know, it's you watch him and you think, wow, you could be so good. And yet you do the wrong thing so often.
I know what you're talking about. I'm not sure if it's dumbness, because I remember him, in that Juventus team, he was pretty elusive. He used to escape into space up the left. And you weren't quite sure where he was. But I do think he's been self-indulgent for United.
Sometimes his teammates didn't know where he was.
He was pretty good for Juventus, but I think he's been self-indulgent more than anything. Mm. I think he's refused to, or hasn't embraced being put in a sort of deeper role with all the defensive responsibilities.
His physicality's seen him through. In many ways, there's a parallel there with Steven Gerrard.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Yeah.
You know, they're not thinkers, they're doers. And
Ross Bartley's another. When you're that good a specimen, it can be quite difficult, can't it?
But, you know, if you slow down a second and think, the potential for improvement in his game is, you know, massive.
Mm. You know, we're in International Week, and there are parallels always. We always go back to club issues. Mm. What about Theo Walcott and Arsenal? He's almost the sort of symbolic Arsenal player.
Yeah.
Flatters to deceive.
Yeah, I mean, there's a couple. Yeah, him, Oxlade Chamberlain, a few of that generation that were still waiting to grow up. In fairness for Arsenal, he has delivered this year, but he had a big anticlimax on Saturday for England. And I've been, you know, I really like him as a guy. I've been reading what he's been telling the lads about, you know, being a different person, growing up, being more aggressive, all that sort of stuff. I think it's a bit early for him to be talking about transformation. I think he probably needs to deliver over a longer period, because he's had these spells before where he's been really, really good, and then he's fallen back. I'd love to see him do it, but I think it's a bit early to say he's a different player.
How many 2-week breakout seasons has he had in his career? He's had loads. We're 14 on his back, probably have 14. That's what stands for. He's been very good for Arsenal. Mm. The interesting thing about Arsenal, I think, the Arsenal side now has got the best balance of any Wenger team since the move to the Emirates. Really impressed by the balance, and he's worked. He works really well in that system. Yeah. Are we going to see him finally at 27 turn into the player that we were told he was going to be at 16? You suspect not, but you know, on his day and within that system, he can be extremely effective.
How important for Arsenal, Jonathan, is it that they get the contracts of Ozil and Sanchez sorted out? Yeah. You know, they're talking £250,000 a week. They're probably going to have to pay that, aren't they?
Yeah, but Arsenal are probably the richest club in the world in some measures. I mean, they've got £180 million sitting in the bank doing nothing. I think it would be hugely symbolic if they lost those two players, because, you know, Arsenal, signing them seemed to be a sort of shift for Arsenal, that they were going to try and have world-class players at the club, and it wasn't all going to be about the future and development. To then lose them just as they've probably hit their peak, both of those players are probably at their peak at the moment, age-wise and everything else, for reasons that would be unclear, because why would they lose them? You know, they've got the money to do it, so it would only be some accountancy kind of philosophy where we don't pay over a certain amount. I do think that would be hugely symbolic for Arsenal, and you know, they are Arsenal's two best players.
I don't think either of them have been worth it so far.
You know,
but no, I think, I mean, they, those two players together, they should have won a league, at least one league, and they should be, you know, the talent they've got is unbelievable. But I think Wenger's got them playing in the right system now. You know, he's got Sanchez playing up front, and he's a one-man press.
Yeah.
You know, he's fantastic, and he's got Ozil sitting in behind him, where it's a better position. He doesn't have to track back. You know, his passing range is limited because he doesn't do the long balls. But the subtlety is
incredible. Yeah.
You know, so you know, there's and he should be able to score more goals there. It puts a lot of pressure on Walcott and Iwobi to go up and down, but they seem to be handling it. Now, the thing is, what's really interesting, you know, if they do, Wenger's tied the last part of his Arsenal career into those two players. Mm. And, you know, so obviously it will be important to see whether they actually pay them the money. But will Wenger be around if they do?
Well, that's the question, isn't it? If you look at the comments of Ivan Gazidis, you know, that had the sound to me of them getting the gold-plated shovels out and they're digging a trench. Can, in the modern era, a manager like Arsene Wenger be allowed to dominate a club like Arsenal?
Well, I'm conflicted on Arsene Wenger. I'll be honest, I don't think there's any subject that I could have changed my mind about more often. I wonder what Arsenal fans must feel. Because I look at the guy and I think, in some ways, you know, Mike, you're right about his status. I don't think anyone else has got that in the modern game.
He revolutionised the Premier League.
In some ways, I look at him and I think, well, you've earned it. You know, you are a bit of an anachronism, but you've earned the right. You like Alex Ferguson. Mm. But in other ways, I look at it and think, but you're not quite, for 13 years, you're not quite achieving what the team's capable of. And I felt a real wave of nostalgia with that 20 years of Wenger thing. I was looking at, you know, as Tony said, he's revolutionised not just Arsenal, but English football. He's brought so many incredible players. He's developed young players into, you know, wonderful careers and all that sort of stuff. Everything you want a manager to do. But we are talking about the past a little bit. I think the ultimate answer is this season he has to, as always, he has to try and win the league or at least be so close that you think he'd do it next year.
You say, you know, a manager dominating a club. Well, what about Pepchester City and Blackpool? You know, I mean, they won't last 20 years.
Yeah.
I'm sure they won't last 20 years. But what's interesting...
Well, the nature of modern game is 3 years max, isn't it?
Yeah. But at a time where clubs are tying... The two big clubs in the Premier League are tying their identities to one man so heavily, Arsenal begin to distance themselves from Wenger. I thought that was a really interesting comment.
So, Jonathan, you've literally written the book on the champions, Leicester. Give me an insight into the difference between them this season than last season, the season that you charted.
I mean, a little bit, I guess a shorthand for how they've changed is, I was looking at their last Premier League fixture, they had £23 million worth of talent, not even in the matchday squad. You know, Musa and Kapuska didn't even make the matchday squad. Now, £23 million was the value of their entire team last year that won the league. Mm-hmm. So that tells you how the club's now in a completely different territory to where it was when it was so successful last season. And is struggling, I guess, to come to terms of that psychologically, I think. And also, I think, you know, just find its place in this year's Premier League. Champions League's the focus for them in terms of this is the next adventure. But what are they going to do in the Premier League? They have lost that sort of, I guess, the underdog identity because of growing as a club. And, you know, they were so tight as a squad last year. Now they've got all these players to try and fit in. So it's a challenge. It asks Ranieri to manage in a different way. And I just think they're finding their way at the moment.
I think it's really interesting that the two games, league games, before the Champions League games, they got stuffed for once, twice, and then come out and played well in the Champions League. And the other thing is, I always remember Steve Nichol saying to me, he says, when you win things, he said, like, everything changes. You know, there's a different set of pressures. He said, you know, everyone's buying you drinks, everyone's patting you on the back. He said, in a dressing room where people have won before, people, hey, behave yourself. Yeah. Get your feet on the ground. Leicester's dressing room have very few people who's won before. Who'd won with Chelsea, but you know, not being a main contributor. So it's difficult for them to come to terms with it a little bit.
I think and on the pitch specifically, they've not just lost Kante. You know, he was an incredible force to lose. But Ranieri's taken Okazaki out of the team because he signed so many forwards. Those two alone injected so much energy into Leicester's game. So it's a double whammy. And Ranieri plays two in midfield, but he had, last year, I'd say he had Kante, who covered two man's ground. He also had Okazaki that dropped back in all the time. Now he's just still trying to play two men, but with different personnel. And the energy's gone a little bit from the team.
And from what I've seen in them, it seems that Verdi's dropped deeper to accommodate to try and Slomani. Which has taken a little bit away from Verdi's game.
Yeah, and Mahrez isn't as influential because it's not just... It was very simple last year. Counter-attacks routed through Mahrez finishing with Vardy, basically.
Yeah. Leicester at Chelsea.
Yeah.
You look at Chelsea and you wait for the explosion, don't you?
Well, without a doubt. I think Conte's looking at it thinking, I've been sold a puppy. He hasn't quite come into the club he thought he was. He's having to accommodate players that he wouldn't naturally buy. I mean, what happened there in the summer is sort of a living proof of the old Rafa Benitez thing at Valencia. You know, I wanted a lamp and he bought me a table. You know, it's you know, he wanted Bonucci or Chiellini and they give him David Luiz. Well, thanks, mate. You know,
it's not even a table, is it?
And, no. And
it's a very elaborate drawing room table, isn't it? Really?
I don't think the bottom's out yet. I think there's a way to go with Chelsea. I think there's a recognition there that they need to buy players that suit Conte in the January window. Whether they'll be able to get them is another thing.
We're talking 60 million for Bonucci. Yeah. Is that realistic in every sense of the word?
Well, Bonucci's more or less my favourite player in world football, actually. I think the guy is just, you know, he's a supreme pro and he's a beautiful footballer. He's so intelligent. He's got everything I love in a defending. He'd be brutal, but he can play as well. But he's about 29. £60 million. I don't think he wants to leave Italy anyway. He's got family issues there, so I don't think that's actually going to come to anything. But the issue for Conte, we were all talking, obviously pre-season, about all these great managers in the Premier League, and you know, you've got Klopp, you've got Guardiola, you've got Mourinho, and Conte. But he is not fighting those other guys with the same resources. He doesn't have as good a squad as Cities or United's, and he hasn't been as embedded as Klopp, and Klopp's, you know, been able to mould his club. So Conte's the one out of those four, I think, it's a bit unfair of him to expect him to almost be their equal at the moment. But the pressure will build on him because Roman Abramovich will be expecting it, won't they?
Well, yeah, and the problem is Abramovich expects, but he'll also... I mean, from when Mourinho left in 2007, and we need to play more entertaining football, Abramovich's will has... if it's not determined the transfer policy, but it's coloured it. And, you know, so he wants entertainers. You know, he loves Oscar, he loves Hazard, and, you know, Conte. You can never imagine Conte playing them two in the same size anyway. And, you know, at the Emirates against Chelsea, you know, when Theo Walcott scored, I mean, Hazard was nearer Conte on the sidelines than his man in the area. And it was like, you could see the exasperation, you could see, you know. And it's going to be a difficult dynamic there.
Yeah. What about the dynamics of Everton going to Manchester City? Yeah. You've got two Barcelona roommates, Guardiola and Koeman. Give me an idea of what you feel of their contrasting managerial styles.
Well, what's interesting is that, you know, Pep is a disciple of Cruyff, and we've been hearing a lot about that last week with Cruyff's, you know, memoir being released. Koeman, despite having come through the Barcelona and obviously the Dutch sort of system, he is not an ideologue in the way that somebody like Guardiola is. He's actually a very practical football guy. His dad was a pro, very good pro. His brother was a top player as well. He's steeped in football. He's got that sort of football person's very pragmatic kind of idea that you win the game no matter how. I talked to him last year about the whole, you know, where do you sit in the Dutch school? Are you a Cruyff? Are you Van Gaal? Blah blah blah. And he kind of laughed. He thinks that's all a bit. And he hears it a lot in Holland. He thinks that's all a bit fluff. So I think what you see with Everton is quite a hard-nosed football team who will do a variety of things to try and win a game. Whereas Guardiola, as we know, has got his sort of pure ideals and will always stick to them. So that makes the game really fascinating, I think.
Oh, without a doubt. I mean, and he come out of a very different period of Barcelona to Guardiola, especially when he was coaching there, when there was the instability and they were changing managers, you know, all the time. I like him. I think he's a very, very sharp operator, knows what he's doing. And what he'll do is he'll take players who probably not of the highest standards, and he'll work on them and get the combinations so it suits them.
Well, Idris Guy has gone in there and absolutely dominated the place, hasn't he?
Yeah, he's fantastic. I mean, you know, the Evertonians have even been making comparisons to Alan Ball. So, you know, that's which is a bit, seems a bit early and a bit extreme to me, but there you go. He's been fantastic. And, you know, the
pragmatism.
You know, John said, that, and I think that is everything, you know, sort of about Koeman's game. They're so pragmatic. Mm. And it will be interesting to see. He'll have thought long and hard about how to take on City and to exploit the space behind their front players and get at those defenders.
I mean, he's got Lukaku working. He's got into his head and done the right things there. Ghana's amazing. I mean, he is like the closest thing to Kante. And Ross Bart, his management of Ross Bartley is very interesting. Mm. That shows a very strong manager who is not—he's not afraid to go for sacred cows there. Yeah. And that can—I think that can improve Ross Bartley.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, and in many ways, Bartley has an easy ride. I mean, Martinez never knew what to do.
No, he didn't. No.
You know, and that, he's gone in there and gone, you know, don't care what people say about your big reputation. You're not improving.
Yeah, good for me. What about City? It looks like Aguero's. Got a calf injury this time in training for Argentina. They'll miss him if he doesn't play, won't they?
Yeah, I think at Spurs we saw that there's a bit of a drop-off at City when they don't quite have the top team and that Guardiola's probably still coming to terms with how good or stroke bad other guys in his squad are. You think of your Navases and look at the defence and it's still not, you know, I think the full-backs are all pretty much past it or need replacing. So Spurs obviously offered the question marks. We've got a very pragmatic and good manager against them. I think they'll try and probe City's weaknesses. And Guardiola's still sort of coming to terms. I think it could be difficult for them. I think overall they'll be fine, but I think this might be a tough period for Guardiola.
What about Spurs? Are they the real deal?
Well, I think they are. I've been on the Spurs bandwagon for a year or more. I think they're fantastic. They're improving. There are concerns about them. I mean, you know, whether they'll last the season at the pace they're going. They still are prone to rushes of blood to the head and there's a lack of leadership there. You know, you saw that against City over the penalty.
Yeah.
You know, at the time they've got a chance to kill the game completely. You know, they're arguing amongst themselves. You know, it wouldn't happen in a team with a strong captain, strong personality there. There's still a bit of youthful sort of,
indiscipline.
And they need to curb that. They are prone to bouts of self-doubt in games, but I do think they're heading in the right direction. I think the main thing for Tottenham is that whether they win the title or not, and I think they have a good chance of doing that, is they finish in the top four. They don't want to be in a situation like they were, a couple of years ago where, you know, they get into the Champions League, you know, Gareth Bale was fantastic, and then they drop out of it and he moves on. They need to consolidate their position as one of the top teams.
We'll end, Jonathan, with the BT Sport game, West Ham at Crystal Palace. Mm. West Ham have fallen off a cliff, haven't they?
They have. I think a lot of that is down to the new stadium and how that's unsettled them. So the playing away here. I think that the
row of seats doesn't play in midfield, does it?
I tell you what's difficult for them. Upton Park, tight traditional English ground with all that entails. You know, they're playing on a bigger pitch, so technically it's different for them. I think Bilic has them very compact, and now they're struggling to play that same way on that bigger pitch. You see. With the Wembley factor affects teams in different ways. I think it's a similar situation. I think there's an intensity that's been lost. You know, Upton Park used to buy West Ham points, used to overwhelm teams sometimes. And that's gone. So I think there's a struggle. But I think they signed badly as well. I mean, they haven't improved the squad at all. And they've probably signed... I think they've been trying to chase the next Payet. And what they've ended up doing is taking gambles on four or five
players. And that begs the question, can they keep Payet?
Well, yeah, I would suspect the answer to that is no. And there are times, and even last season there were times, when he appears to be playing for himself, not the team. I think they've got a real problem there. It's a huge test for Bilic, how he, over the next few weeks, how he deals with the team. There's a sense that his way of doing things, his shtick, as worn thin a little bit with the players. They're seeing through it and they're not responding to it. And if that's true, then he's in deep, deep trouble. He's got to find a way of galvanising that team. And the problem is they're very, very workmanlike in midfield.
Yeah,
there's not a lot of pace at all. They're getting killed there.
Well, West Ham seems to be a club at odds with itself. That's never a good look. Thanks for joining us here on the Football Writers Podcast.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia, movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.